This episode is brought to you by the Election Network. It's the second part of our three-part series exploring democracy and human rights from the lens of women in Nigeria.
Let's begin this episode with the turbulent but inspiring journey of 43-year-old Nigerian politician Natasha Akpoti-Uduaghan.
Senate has administered the oath of office on Mrs. Natasha Akpoti-Uduaghan as the first female senator from Kogi State, representing Kogi Central Senatorial District in the 10th Senate.
Natasha is from Okene Local Government in Kogi State, not Central Nigeria. Born to a Nigerian dad and a Ukrainian mother, she's the second of four children. Natasha, along with her three siblings, were raised in Ajaokuta, another local government area in Kogi State. Ajaokuta is known as the site of Nigeria's largest steel mill, the Ajaokuta Steel Mill. The history of the steel mill is complex. Although it's not the main focus of this episode, it's important to note that the Ajaokuta Steel Mill was designed to produce steel from Nigeria's iron ore and coal. The whole plan was to boost the country's exports and create jobs for thousands of people. But it has barely been operational since its inauguration decades ago. So in 2018, Natasha presented an investigative report about the mill to Nigeria's National Assembly.
The previous speakers have taken time to speak magnanimously about the functions of Ajaokuta Steel is more than a steel plant. But what I would say today, especially with reference to the very last speaker, barrister, any private sector, any private player, whoever feels he has the capacity...
Natasha's presentation lasted about 43 minutes. She talked about the corrupt practices happening at the mill and how it had provided an avenue for government funds to be consistently embezzled since its establishment in the 70s. Before presenting this report at Nigeria's House of Representatives in May 2018, Natasha had already been vocal about Ajaokuta. Remember that she grew up around the steel mill, so of course she was passionate about reviving it. This particular presentation at Nigeria's House of Representatives threw her into the limelight. She became known as this symbol of activism, you know, the face of the struggle for the steel mill's revival. Then, on August 3rd, 2018, Natasha took her activism up a notch. She publicly declared her intention to run for a seat in the Nigerian Senate, aiming to represent the people of Kogi Central. Naturally, her campaign included a commitment to advocate for laws that would bolster industrialization in Nigeria, along with revitalizing the steel plants nationwide, including the Ajaokuta Steel Mill. Natasha's announcement to run for office came with an unimaginable amount of chaos and complexity, one that lasted at least 4.5 years.
The first attack was a verbal assault, the man calling me a prostitute. He said, "There comes the prostitute. Look at Natasha Ashewo. Natasha Ashewo, get out. You are not wanted here." And I smiled and kept on walking.
Over the next few years, Natasha faced a tough battle against intimidation, violence, and gender bias, not to mention clashes with several powerful political figures in Kogi State. Hi, my name is Aisha Salahuddin, and I like girls. This is a narrative storytelling podcast about African women and the different experiences life throws at us for being women. In this episode, we jump into Natasha Akpoti-Uduaghan's story to uncover how women in politics and governance face discrimination in Nigeria. We'll also chat with a lawyer, Miriam Ibrahim Mero.
My name is Miriam Mero Ibrahim. I'm a development lawyer. I also dabble in politics from a CSO point of view. I'm a member of Young Women in Politics Forum. And yeah.
Miriam will guide us through the legal framework surrounding women's rights to vote and be voted for, shedding light on what the law actually says about these fundamental rights. But first, Natasha. Natasha chose to pursue her political ambitions with the Social Democratic Party, SDP. Initially, she was a member of Nigeria's ruling party, the All Progressives Congress, APC. But she switched to the SDP after an encounter with the then governor of Kogi State, Yahya Bello, also of the APC, Nigeria's ruling party. The story here is that Yahya Bello offered her a bribe. He wanted all the APC senatorial aspirants to withdraw in favor of his preferred candidate.
I would say this. In 2018, before I joined the SDP and contested for the senatorial seat, I was in APC for pretty much 3 months. And I will say this, the governor called on me, just like he called on 9 other aspirants at that point, and telling each and every one to step down. To some people, he offered money. He offered me money as well. He offered me 50 million at first. I turned down. He said, how about 70 million so you will step down for my anointed candidate?
Rather than bow out of the race, Natasha switched allegiance to the SDP and threw her hat into the ring for a Senate seat. This decision set the stage for a tussle with the former governor of Kogi State and various other influential political figures within the state. Throughout her campaign, she spoke out about facing gender discrimination. In the previous episode, we talked about the hurdles women in governance and politics have to overcome. Natasha faced these too, enduring verbal abuse and demeaning tactics aimed at derailing her campaign by two of Nigeria's major political parties, the APC, the ruling party, and the PDP, the People's Democratic Party, the opposition party. Here's a clip of Natasha sharing her experience of intimidation on the eve of the 2019 senatorial elections in Kogi State.
On the eve of the elections, I was denied entrance into the state by over 100 of Governor Yahya Bello's government house police led by his ADC.
Remember, Yahya Bello served as the governor of Kogi State from 2016 to 2024 under the banner of the APC, Nigeria's ruling party. At the time, Natasha claimed that the governor tried to sabotage her campaign efforts to ensure that the senatorial seat remained under the control of his party, the APC.
I had to take a detour from Abaji via Nasarawa, Kefi, Benue, then getting into the state. On arriving Okene at 9 a.m., I met the same men who disarmed my security, sent away my security personnel, and blocked my vehicle from movement using bricks and tires. It took the intervention of the force headquarters, who instructed the Okene area commander to free me and my personnel, leading me to my polling unit.
Natasha alleges that the then governor of Kogi State employed thugs and directed security personnel to continually harass her, her team, and supporters. As mentioned in that clip, Natasha nearly missed the chance to vote at her polling unit during the 2019 Kogi State senatorial elections. But there's more. She claims that throughout the voting process, there was significant rigging in favor of the ruling party. Her supporters and team members were also subjected to intimidation, bullying, and violence.
Yesterday, the mother of Ojo Inesi, the youth leader who was murdered by the same APC thugs, was attacked in her home. Also attacked was the woman who led the Ihima women protest a few weeks ago. Also, two brothers in Adawi local government were stabbed for voting Natasha. These three instances I mentioned are episodes that are currently occurring to my supporters, which make part of the post-election attacks.
What Natasha is describing sounds like a nightmare. Just for exercising her right to run for office, she faced verbal and physical abuse. Worse still, some of her supporters were arrested and intimidated for protesting in her favor. Others were injured and killed. She found herself up against incredibly powerful political figures from the ruling party. These figures had access to state resources, which they could use to undermine her campaign significantly. As you might guess, the senatorial election on February 23rd, 2019, didn't end in Natasha's favor. The Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, announced APC's Yakubu Oseni as the winner, securing 76,183 votes. Natasha finished in second place with 48,056 votes, while the opposition party, the PDP, landed in third with 18,349 votes. By Nigerian standards, clinching second place as a candidate from a smaller political party and outperforming 17 other candidates like Natasha did is very impressive, especially for someone who faced numerous challenges throughout her campaign.
Now, on the election proper, manipulations and rigging of the elections. What started as a peaceful election ended up being one of the most horrible daylight robbery of our election and democracy. Ballot boxes were snatched and some destroyed by fire. Card readers were stolen and many tampered with to accept votes without verification. And in many places, card readers were not used at all. Pre-thumb-printed ballot papers were stuffed into the ballot boxes across many polling units.
Yeah, the entire Kogi State Central Senatorial election was riddled with inconsistencies. Natasha is convinced that that election was rigged to ensure her defeat. Now, it's worth noting that Natasha is a lawyer, having been called to the Nigerian bar in 2005. So, naturally, she took her fight to the next level by challenging the election results in court. Did that help? Right after the break. The bottom line is, Natasha didn't make it into the Senate in 2019. Despite her determined efforts, the APC candidate was declared winner. Later, in that same year, Natasha tried something else. She set her sights on the governorship of Kogi State, choosing to run under the banner of the SDP once again. She encountered the same problems as before, but this time around, the stakes were even higher. She was directly challenging Yahya Bello, the governor of Kogi State, making the battle even more daunting.
Another force to be reckoned with is the Social Democratic Party SDP gubernatorial flag bearer, Natasha Hadiza Okpoti. And she's yet to be cleared by the INEC, by Independent National Electoral Commission.
Now, Mrs. Natasha Okpoti had tweeted this week that we must resist every attempt by Yahya Bello and Yakubu Mahmood to disenfranchise us. The Kogi State governorship candidate of the Social Democratic Party, Natasha Okpoti, had earlier caused a scene at the entrance to the headquarters of the Independent Electoral Commission in Abuja for disqualifying her from the contest on the grounds of the age of her running mate. It was gathered that INEC equally refused to accept the replacement.
The Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, responsible for overseeing elections, disqualified Natasha and her running mate, Bashir Yakubu, citing that Bashir was too young to run in the governorship election. He was 34, but the constitution requires candidates for governorship and their deputies to be at least 35 years old. But what was peculiar about his disqualification was INEC's refusal to accept a replacement candidate for deputy, one who fulfilled the age criteria. Of course, Natasha challenged this in court.
An Abuja High Court has reversed INEC's disqualification of SDP's governorship candidate Natasha Okpoti from contesting the Kogi governorship election.
So, Natasha eventually managed to compete in the Kogi State governorship election, right? But it wasn't without its hurdles. The verdict allowing her to run was issued just 9 days before the election, leaving her with hardly any time to campaign or rally support. Despite these odds, she persevered, facing additional obstacles, including ballot box snatching, intimidation of her supporters, and outright violence on election day, March 2nd, 2019. Natasha finished in third place, securing 9,402 votes. She was outpaced by PDP's Musa Wada and APC's Yahya Bello, who won the election with 406,222 votes and continued as governor. As expected, Natasha challenged the election results, taking her case all the way to the Supreme Court, the PDP candidate, who finished in second place, also contested the outcome, alleging election malpractice. But
on July 4th, 2020, the Court of Appeal in Abuja upheld Governor Bello's re-election. But PDP and SDP governorship candidates still fought the judgment seeking for redress at the Supreme Court. Victory came the way of Governor Yahya Bello on 31st August 2020 as the Supreme Court dismissed two separate appeals that challenged his re-election.
Natasha pretty much had to deal with the heartbreak of losing yet again. Okay, let's fast forward to 3 years later, March 2022. Natasha made a switch to the People's Democratic Party, PDP, Nigeria's opposition party, bringing along some of her supporters from the SDP.
The Eid praying ground in Obeba Ehima in Kogi State is filled with a large number of members from the People's Democratic Party. They are here to witness the defection of prominent politician Natasha Akpoti-Uduaghan and 5,000 members from the Social Democratic Party to the People's Democratic Party.
Natasha's switch to the PDP was a strategic move, setting her up for the 2023 election cycle. Once again, she entered the race, aiming to secure a Senate seat to represent the Kogi Central Senatorial District, the same seat she lost in 2019. What unfolded next might seem all too familiar. Natasha faced a barrage of challenges, not just for her gender, but also for daring to challenge the status quo. The same problems emerged, with Natasha enduring verbal, fiscal, and psychological violence throughout her campaign. But it's important to note that Natasha had a lot of supporters. That's the sound of enthusiasm and hope from her supporters during her 2023 campaign. But as we've come to realize, having a strong support base and the right qualifications for office often isn't enough when you're a woman. After the break, Natasha finally secures her seat in the Nigerian Senate after 4 years of relentless struggle. Plus, development lawyer Maryam Miro Ibrahim will shed light on political repression, offering insights from a legal perspective. Welcome back. Natasha encountered familiar obstacles, facing off against the manipulations and underhanded tactics of Yahya Bello, the then governor of Kogi State, who was determined to see his party's candidate win the Senate seat. She claims the election was plagued by irregularities, with the ruling party, the APC, allegedly disrupting the voting process. When the votes were counted, the APC candidate, Sadiku Abubakar Ohere, emerged victorious with 52,087 votes, narrowly edging out Natasha, who secured 51,763 votes. Guess what happened next? Predictably, Natasha challenged the election results, taking her case to the tribunal. After months of anticipation for the verdict, this time she emerged victorious. That's the sound of Natasha's supporters beating drums and dancing in celebration of her long-anticipated win. In November 2023, Natasha's perseverance paid off when she was sworn in as the senator representing Kogi Central, marking the culmination of her persistent efforts to serve her people.
What do you think may have been responsible for this level of opposition that you had from the state government, from, you know, the Kogi state government or governor, if you like? Is it because you're a woman, or are there other factors that played out?
I would say.
Are there other factors that may have led to this very, very serious opposition from the state government?
You see, people are born differently. Isn't it odd that a state governor would issue a statement that he accepts the judgment? He wasn't on the ballot. But he went all out, owning this, the last election, as if it were Yahya Bello against Natasha at the last election. So when you ask me why he went overboard this way, I would just say it is who he is. It is who he is. When the person is vindictive and dictatorial in nature, that is just who he is.
Her gender played a role in all of it. But Natasha also strongly believes, as you heard, that Yahya Bello had it out for her personally. By the way, Natasha's victory also makes her Kogi State's first woman senator. Talk about making history, right? More than just a personal triumph or a win for Kogi State, Natasha's success stands as a ray of hope for Nigerian women in governance and politics. In many ways, it symbolizes the myriad of challenges women encounter in the political arena and serves as a beacon, you know, demonstrating what can be achieved by women aspiring to political office.
My name is Maryam Miri Ibrahim. I'm a development lawyer. I also dabble in politics from a CSO point of view. I'm a member of Young Women in Politics Forum.
Miriam is an expert on the subject of women in politics and governance. With her legal background, she understands the law, especially as it pertains to women seeking elected office. So, for a couple of minutes, we talked about Natasha Akpoti Uduaghan's journey.
And even though Natasha is, you know, senator now, I don't think she has gotten any justice for a lot of the suffering that she went through. I mean, who was arrested, who was indicted in the Kogi State government for the kinds of harassment she went through. So in many ways, some of these things that a lot of these things that happened to Natasha goes against the principles of law and democracy. They are illegal. The law does not back them up. There's literally no legal basis for the extent of harassment this lady went through. But yeah, happy she's in the Senate now.
What I really wanted to highlight from this bit of our conversation is the fact that the intimidation Natasha and other women face in their political journeys is not supported by the Nigerian constitution. In fact, such actions are illegal. So, what does the constitution explicitly say about women's rights to expression, as well as their rights to vote and be voted for?
So, every person should be able to contest for office regardless of their gender. So, Section 39 of the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria already allows for persons to be able to express themselves. And if a woman wants to be an added voice in governance, you know, so that at a bigger stage, at a wider stage, she's able to express herself and even communicate for other women, because democracy is all about representation. So legally, there is no impediment as far as I know, as far as Section 39 of the Constitution, there is no impediment to her expressing herself in whatever way she deems fit.
Seeking political office as a woman is not against the law. In fact, as I learned from Miriam, political repression directly infringes upon a woman's freedom of expression. This raises the question, right? Why is it so challenging for women politicians like Natasha Akpoti Uduaghan to seek and obtain legal justice when pursuing redress in court?
The legal framework of Nigeria also includes customary laws. I think a lot of times when we're talking about laws, we ignore the fact that customary laws are actually valid and recognized in Nigeria. I mean, we even have customary courts for that reason. And most of our customary laws are largely unwritten. So they are the cultural practices that form these customary laws. And being the patriarchal society that we are, these cultural practices, you know, they grow and become entrenched.
What Miriam is saying is that outside the constitution, Nigeria recognizes some traditional norms and practices. Customary laws. Let's break it down. Customary laws are unwritten traditional practices and rules that govern group behavior. These laws are usually handed down orally from one generation to the next. And in some parts of Nigeria, local community leaders enforce customary laws alongside the state and federal laws. For example, Islamic law or Sharia, which governs marriage, divorce, and inheritance for Muslims, can be considered customary. In disputes related to these matters within certain Muslim communities in Nigeria, it's common to turn to a customary court for judgment. The Nigerian legal system incorporates customary law by integrating its elements into state and federal laws and by recognizing the authority of community leaders. But while customary law plays a role in regulating behavior and resolving disputes, it can also discriminate against women and clash with other legal provisions. Given the widespread prejudice against women in Nigeria, this bias can extend from customary laws to broader issues, including barriers women face when running for office in the country.
I think we should really stop ignoring customary laws because they are very influential in our societies, in our rural societies especially, and a lot of people still live in these rural communities are guarded by their customary, by these customary laws. So when people are talking to women and saying, well, you're a woman, you should not be contesting, they're speaking from a place of, you know, from what they're used to in their cultures. I mean, there are cultures where women are not even welcome to speak in clan meetings. So how then do you expect such people to be open to having a woman lead them in government? So I think the greatest barrier, legal barrier, when we're talking about the legal aspect of things, for me would be customary law, because I can think of nothing in the Constitution, in the Electoral Act 2022, that directly says women should not contest for office.
With these customary laws, what an, like, is it that if we're to, okay, wait, hold on, let me think of how to frame this question. During our conversation, I got a little lost. I understood that customary laws might influence wider legal challenges, particularly concerning women in politics, leading me to wonder if these laws could ever override federal laws. But that's not how it works. Miriam helped clarify things for me.
No, I wanted to clarify something because I feel like I created confusion in your mind. These customary courts, nobody, like I said, these customary laws are largely unwritten and they just form the basis of how society functions, you know. But when it comes to, for example, inheritance, you know, rights of a woman to own property and all of these things, or even when it comes to maybe chieftaincy titles, there are issues that these customary laws address on an official level. But when it comes to the level of being voted and being voted for, they do not have a play in the grand scheme of things. I'm talking about the undertone when it comes to our practices, our beliefs, and what we uphold as, you know, guidance for how we go about practicing in society. I don't mean it from a legal point of view. From, you know, I'm not saying that any customary law that says women are not to be leaders or are not to be in position of leadership can stand in any of the courts in Nigeria. I mean, that would be instantly thrown out. I'm just talking about it as a model of practice.
In other words, no customary law can contradict the Constitution or any other law of the country.
But when it comes to elections on the level of our legal system, in no account, again, let me repeat, no account where anyone will come and say by law as a woman, you're not allowed to practice.
Okay, I get it. I also see why Miriam emphasizes that customs and traditions frequently shape perceptions about women's rights to vote and be elected. Given Nigeria's patriarchal society, right, biases against women often infiltrate and affect how laws are viewed and interpreted by the public. Reflecting on women politicians like Sewusi Bem, who we discussed in the previous episode, and others like Natasha Akpoti-Uduaghan, it's clear to see how customary laws might shape and influence perceptions of women like them running for office. There's this prevailing notion that women should not be in the political space, but rather at home, focusing on their families. This mindset contributes to the broader societal difficulty in accepting women who defy traditional expectations and challenge the status quo. I don't know about you, but I found this episode incredibly enlightening. Exploring Natasha's journey offered me fresh insights into the kinds of obstacles and violence that women candidates face. And talking with Miriam highlighted the fact that many challenges encountered by women in politics amount to a suppression of their freedom of expression. And I gained valuable insights into how customary laws can act as significant barriers for women in politics and governance. In our next and final episode of this limited series, we'll focus on solutions. What actions can we take to ensure a level playing field for Nigerian women in governance and politics?
I believe in dialogue a lot. I'm growing into seeing the benefits of dialogue. And they hold the political power. You cannot deny that. They hold the political power. So what are your methods? They still boil down to collaboration. If you're going to take it by force, quotes in the air, if you're going to take it by force, you still need numbers.
We'll also discuss hope. The current political landscape may be disheartening, but there's always room for improvement, right? By continually striving and remaining optimistic, we can hold on to the belief that things will get better.
But I do think that for us to keep on doing the things that we're doing, we need to have a certain level of hope. If not, why are we waking up in the morning and say we're doing development work? We can't kid ourselves, right? But I just think that in our doings, there's a certain level of hope, but there's also a certain level of realism.
Thank you for listening to this episode of I Like Girls. If you'd like to get in touch with us, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at I Like Girls Gang. This episode was written and produced by me, Aisha Salahuddin. Mo Isu handled the audio engineering and sound design, with Peter Akinusi serving as our editor. Our theme music was created by Banks with a double G. Special thanks to the Election Network and Document Women for partnering with us on this episode. And a special shout out to Maryam Mero Ibrahim for her invaluable insights in this episode. The clips of Natasha you heard throughout this episode were obtained from the following news channels: Arise TV, Confluence Chronicles, NTA Abuja, TVC Nigeria, Sahara TV, Nigeria Reality News, and Channels Television. I'll catch you on the next episode.